Hello and welcome to Gore and Grapes, where I review horror films and enjoy a glass of wine while I tingle your spine. I'm your host, Carla, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 8. Hello, everybody. Thank you all very much for joining me today. I'm very grateful to have you back. I am looking forward to this episode, not because, oh my god, it's an amazing movie or whatever. It's a movie that I've never seen before up until recently. And I say that I'm looking forward to it because some of these themes that we'll be talking about are themes that I also have some interest in and just things that you normally don't see in horror lately. And I am excited to dive in to that and then also talk about how the film doesn't necessarily fit into a traditional horror film stereotype, but more on that later. I have gotten quite comfortable talking a little bit of what I do outside of the podcast, and you guys seem to like it for some reason, but I am happy to share that with you. I'm a private person for the most part, and the little bit that I do share, I'm comfortable with doing so. And one of the things that I've shared with everyone recently is my baking, I don't want to say journey, my baking adventures, my baking endeavors. I shared a couple weeks ago that I made a matcha pound cake, which I'm very proud of still. I know that it needs some refining, but I recently shared a picture of a lemon pound cake that I made, or a lemon loaf cake, bread, whatever. And I shared it on my Instagram stories, and you guys all seem to really like it. I shared it because my boyfriend was on tour recently. He was away for a little bit, and so I figured, why not welcome him back home with something homemade? As you know, when you're on tour, you're eating garbage. And so I figured, why not? You know, just something to keep me busy as always. So that was really nice. And he loved it, of course. And so did I. I'm very proud of it. That was a 10 out of 10 loaf of bread. I will certainly refine the glaze or the icing, but regardless, it was fantastic. I loved it. And I started sharing it because I, apart from everything else that I do with the podcast, you know, there is a little bit more to me and you all deserve to know just a little bit of who I am outside of the podcast, because I am also a well-rounded person, and I want to cultivate this relationship with you just as the main character of this film does with the other character that we will talk about here shortly. But regardless, that's what I did. I haven't done anything since. But whenever I do get to baking something new, I'll be sure to let everybody know. Apart from that, I finished the main story of Animal Crossing, and I was a little upset, I'm not gonna lie. For those of you who have played Animal Crossing, you know exactly what I mean. So now I'm just working on refining my island, and I haven't picked it up since. But the game that I have picked up recently was RoboCop, and so far so good. I don't know if that's a film I'll ever review on the on the podcast, but it is one of my favorite sci-fi movies, sci-fi action movies, and I just bought the game yesterday. So far, so good. I've heard nothing but great things about it. My friends have been raving about it, and so I figured, why not? I love the movie already. Let's just follow it up with the game. And so I put my Switch on the back burner for now, and I finally turned on my Xbox after like 6 to 8 months. So that's what I've been doing. Apart from working, that's what I've been doing. And I'm on track to reading 10 books this year. That was a goal that I've had, and I just finished my third or fourth book. So far so good. I've been doing about a book a month or so. So yay me. But that's typically what my life looks like outside of the podcast. And I'll be sure to share a little bit more as we move forward. Enough of my yapping, though. We've got a lot to get through today. I would like to introduce tonight's wine of choice, but we do have a disclaimer to get through. The content provided in this podcast includes references to alcohol and its consumption, but it is essential to emphasize that we do not endorse or encourage the irresponsible or excessive consumption of alcohol. Alcohol should be consumed responsibly and in moderation. It is crucial to be aware of the legal drinking age and adhere to local laws and regulations regarding alcohol consumption. Any alcohol references or depictions in this podcast are purely for entertainment and informational purposes. They should not be taken as a suggestion or endorsement to engage in unsafe or unlawful drinking practices. Please make informed decisions and prioritize your safety and well-being. Throughout season two, I've introduced some heavy, strong, full-bodied bottles of wine, and I think it's time that we switch it up a little bit. And the reason being is because, first and foremost, the last couple of episodes have been quite strong, heavy themes. They've been just heavy overall. And so I figured, you know, this movie is also, in comparison to the other films, just a little light. And so, or light in the themes, light in the concept and the story, so on and so forth. So I figured let's tone it down a little bit and let's just enjoy some wine and enjoy the movie too. But regardless, I did go for a rosé this time, something I don't normally reach for, as you all know. But like I said, we're going to tone it down just a little bit. We're going to savor our wine this time. Tonight's bottle of wine is called Scout Wild by Scout & Cellar, and reading the label in the back, it reads, "Healthy soil, wildly delicious grapes, lots of love and passion, that's a recipe. Follow nature, Scout Wild. Sustainably grown in healthy soil, no artificial processing aids or added sugars, independently lab tested to meet our standard." The ABV for this wine is 12.5%. This is vegan friendly and gluten free as well. I'm really excited to dig in. So with that, cheers. Right away, it's very light as I described it, light as it looks. Not that the color matters, but it is quite pinky, rosy, and it's quite fruity. It's light on the palate. It's flavorful as well. And it just feels very good. I like this. I see myself drinking this a little more often. As a matter of fact, a little more often than the last wine I just tried. Never again. I did have to throw that one away, by the way. But this one, for a rosé, it's a 10 out of 10 for me. Tonight's film is Rent-A-Pal. I have seen this one float around a little bit, and I never cared to watch it, to be completely honest with you. It didn't pull me in right away just by looking at the poster, and it didn't look like a horror movie to me, at least not, again, right away. But I read the description, I saw the trailer, and I thought, okay, I think I can give this one a shot. And like, I've seen it being thrown around. I've heard people talk about it, but not like most movies. I didn't hear it very often. It was certainly a lesser known film. But regardless, I took a chance on it. And I do have a little bit to say. For those of you who don't know, 40-year-old David is a full-time caregiver to his mom who has dementia, putting his whole life on hold. As he battles loneliness, he tries a VHS dating service with no success, but after coming across a Rent-A-Pal VHS tape, he forms a strong but unhealthy relationship with its host Andy, affecting not only his love life, but his sanity. This film was released on September 11th, 2020. Rent-A-Pal was directed by John Stevenson, which so happens to be his directorial debut. The cast is made up of Brian Landis Fulkins, Will Wheaton, Kathleen Brady, and Amy Rutledge, which, by the way, when I looked up Amy Rutledge, I thought, this sounds very familiar, and I couldn't put it together once I looked her up. I'm like, that's, I don't know. That's not the Amy Rutledge I'm thinking. And sure enough, the Amy Rutledge I was thinking about was the news anchor on WGN News here in Chicago. But nonetheless, that was really funny. Some fun facts about Rent-A-Pal, starting with number one. There was an actual VHS tape in 1986 called Rent-A-Friend, and the scenes Will Wheaton is in are all direct references to the actual VHS tape. Fun fact number two, in 2020 at Grimfest, Preston Fassel, horror writer and jury member, wanted to award the film every prize at the fest due to how much he loved it and went as far as arguing with the other jury members to make it happen. The other members were able to convince him otherwise, to take into account what the other movies had to offer. Rent-A-Pal won Best Actor and Best Screenplay. Fun fact number three, the film was financed by the filmmakers themselves, so presenting it to IFC Midnight was huge. They believe that if it wasn't for the pandemic that year, IFC may not have picked them up. Regardless, IFC took advantage of the pandemic, and instead of having a theatrical release as planned, they took it to streaming platforms. I do want to briefly say that this episode will have two different formats. It's not going to be in the original analysis format that I've been doing the last couple episodes. I will be doing the analysis portion for the first part of the episode, and then the second part will be a pros and cons type of format. And I figured because, one, some movies don't benefit from just one format. I think that it's not doing the movie justice by just going off of one way of critiquing it. And I think that this film in particular will benefit from exploring some of the themes that the movie presents, and then also just a regular pros and cons, just to really do this movie justice. Some films just are not as heavy as others, as we have seen this. When I was first doing the podcast, the first couple of episodes were just strictly pros and cons, but some movies were done justice by doing it that way, whereas a film like The Exorcist can be expanded on. And anyway, I figured that I give everyone a heads up that I'm going off of both formats this time, and this should really capture the movie for what it is when we explore it from two different angles, if that makes sense. So just a heads up. On the analysis portion, I would like to talk about dating and intimacy in the digital age as my first point. Dating has changed a lot in the last couple of decades with the rise of technology and the ever-changing social media. Dating apps have certainly changed the game. You download an app like Tinder, you create a profile, introduce yourself to the world and what you're looking for. You wait to see if anyone likes you and swipes whatever direction means I like you. I don't remember. And if there is a match, you talk and you hope that it progresses into an in-person date. Gone are the days where you go somewhere, tuck up a shoddy, and you see what's up. But arguably, the effort is removed from the equation and you hope that the love of your life lands on your lap. In an article titled How Online Dating Has Changed the Way We Fall in Love by Donna Ferguson, published by The Guardian, she quotes Dr. Marie Bergstrom, a French researcher, quote, "In the Western world, courtship has always been tied up and very closely associated with ordinary social activities like leisure, work, school, or parties. There has never been a specifically dedicated place for dating." End quote. The film perfectly encapsulates what it's like, albeit the method and period of time is different, but the feelings are the same: frustration, impatience, disillusionment, sadness, and longing. No matter how hard David tries by taking notes of the tapes of the women he's watching or redoing his introduction tape, he has a hard time getting a match or any responses. This is true even today with online dating services and apps. According to an article titled The Virtues and Downsides of Online Dating, published by the Pew Research Center, who we've quoted before, they find that men have a harder time getting messages compared to women. Quote, "There are substantial gender differences in the amount of attention online daters say they received on dating sites or apps. Men who have online dated in the past 5 years are far more likely than women to feel as if they did not get enough messages, 57% versus 24%. On the other hand, women who have online dated in this time period are 5 times as likely as men to think they were sent too many messages, 30% versus 6%. The survey also asked online daters about their experiences with getting messages from people they were interested in. In a similar pattern, these users are more likely to report receiving too few rather than too many of these messages, 54% versus 13%. And while gender differences remain, they are far less pronounced. For example, 61% of men who have online dated in the past 5 years say they did not receive enough messages from people they were interested in, compared with 44% of women who say this. End quote. We also see how men are treated in the dating realm differently than women do in the scene where David is redoing his introduction video. He goes off on a tangent, exceeds over about a minute long, and the gentleman recording says, yeah, that's great and all, but you got to shorten it by 30 seconds. And so I think this also puts into perspective that sometimes men just have a harder time because of the presentation and perhaps just a disadvantage that men have. I can't really speak on it, but from a woman's perspective, sometimes it is just the presentation or lack thereof. And for a woman, that's quite important. I don't know. I really don't know. But it's clear that there was a disadvantage here with David in the movie. Given that David spends most of his time caring for his mother, he has no time or has a harder time to put himself out there and make the effort to find a partner in a traditional sense. Instead, the VHS service he uses is his best shot and therefore convenient. Convenient is the word I want everyone to remember when talking about this. Back in the day, during our parents' time and beyond, the need for a partner was vastly different. A partner for someone then meant taking care of the family, financially providing, someone taking care of the kids, tending to the farm, etc., etc. Looks were arguably the center point so long as they were capable. We have now shifted from convenience to companionship, and there are studies that do happen to prove this. Studies show that people nowadays place looks second where first place is taken by companionship. In The Science of Intimate Relationships, written by Garth Fletcher, Jeffrey A. Simpson, Lauren Campbell, Nicola C. Overall, data says that people typically value intelligence over looks. Isn't that beautiful? We have evolved into a highly independent society. We are capable of doing anything by ourselves. I can only speak on behalf of women and from my own experience as a woman beyond this point, but women are now able to open bank accounts by themselves without the requirement of being married. Women have full-fledged careers. More women are choosing not to have children. And with all of this, women are more than ever free to do what they like, and that includes choosing the perfect partner. I find that this point in particular also applies to David and his date, Lisa. Lisa was a career girl. She was a nurse and volunteered on her days off. She was clearly an independent woman and did not find herself particularly needing a man. In the film, she simply yearned for a connection, finding the person she felt that complemented her already meaningful life. How this film portrayed Lisa was endearing, but also accurate and with justice. It was a true reflection of a healthy individual that had already created a fulfilling life. On the subject of connection and intimacy, this can mean anything, depending on who you talk to. But my favorite definition of intimacy is by the APA Dictionary of Psychology. Quote, an interpersonal state of extreme emotional closeness, such that each party's personal space can be entered by any of the other parties without causing discomfort to that person. Intimacy characterizes close, familiar, and usually affectionate or loving personal relationships and requires the parties to have a detailed knowledge or a deep understanding of each other. End quote. Stating the obvious, David also yearned for a more specific form of intimacy, and that is sexual. Not everyone looks for this kind of intimacy, as there are individuals who have no sexual interest. For the majority, however, it's an important aspect of closeness. We see that David watches vintage adult films, fantasizes frequently, and has an awkward encounter with Lisa at one point. Regardless of how this is all portrayed and perceived, sexual intimacy plays a big part in romantic closeness, and the lack thereof can fuel loneliness and longing for meaningful human connection. Despite the film taking place in the 90s and the dating service is through an outdated means, it still invites a discussion about the reality of dating in the digital age, the social changes it has brought, the perception of potential partners, and a much more difficult dating landscape to navigate. I do want to say, just my two cents, that despite the help and convenience of dating apps, it can further isolate individuals from their true goal, and it becomes counterintuitive. Like David, it was technology that introduced him to this new world, and yet it was also technology that pulled him further away, turning him into the person he so became. In a broader sense, we're so deep into it all, being chronically online, that it does the complete opposite, and you feel that you're no longer connecting with the people you once did, or gives a false perception of connection. I find that to be the subject of discussion frequently as we become more dependent. Regardless, David was too deep, and it's what took him out, so to speak. My next point is regarding incel culture. I'm going to be completely honest, but I didn't think David fit into this right away when I first watched the movie, but it was less about David and more about Andy, the pal in the VHS tape. David is seen as a caring, sweet, selfless guy who not only cares about his mother, but genuinely yearns for an authentic connection with a woman that will bring vitality to his less than perfect life. This all slowly begins to change when he brings home the Rent-A-Pal tape home. Andy, the host or friend in the tape, is an average-looking guy and gives off a Mr. Rogers kind of vibe. At first, it's all quite harmless until he begins to send misogynistic messages that David then internalizes. For one, a more overt example, he mentions that he got what he wanted out of a woman when giving details about an encounter he had in the past. Less overt but more manipulative in nature, when David has plans with Lisa, Andy guilt trips him into canceling because they are friends and he shouldn't ditch him for someone he just met and has no relation to. The constant guilt tripping, patronizing comments, and manipulation makes this a classic case of incel culture. For those who don't know, an incel is defined as, quote, a term closely associated with an online subculture of people, mostly white, male, and heterosexual, who defines themselves as unable to get a romantic or sexual partner despite desiring one, end quote. This comes from the term involuntarily celibate and dates back well into the 90s. Within this subculture, there lies deep hatred and resentment towards women, advocating for rape culture and violence, nihilism, self-hatred and pity, and other forms of aggression. Reddit was at some point known as being a place where this ideology was tolerated until 2017, where the subreddit Incels was banned, and at that time there was an estimated 40,000 members in that subreddit. It didn't stop there clearly, as it appeared on other subreddits and later banned again in 2019 after Reddit broadened their policies. That isn't to say this doesn't exist in other platforms or forums where it's tightly monitored and away from the public eye. We've talked plenty about male fantasy and violence against women in my Perfect Blue episode, and one of the points I made was that dialogue is the starting point and the catalyst for such behavior. Wherever this dialogue is tolerated is a place that creates uncomfortable atmospheres and makes way for unacceptable behavior. We see that with how David internalizes the messages Andy sends. David also begins to treat and talk to Lisa differently than when he was first interacting with her. It's evident that without Andy's influence, David was a gentleman, respectful of the woman in front of him, and his treatment towards Lisa was a reflection of his values and beliefs. It wasn't until Andy became more involved in David's life that his tune began to change, that is, until David was going after a woman, aka ditching him for a girl, aka fill in the blanks. The David we all saw in the beginning was vastly different from the David we saw in the end. That is the power of the influence of incel culture. Personally, I was never attuned to incel culture for the obvious, and because I never understood it or had any friends that were going down this path, so I only really knew about it by reading or seeing it in movies, TV shows, etc., but I've never personally experienced it. It's an uncomfortable topic for obvious reasons, but it's truly dangerous because the potential for more aggressive behavior is there. According to an article by The Guardian titled, "Experts Fear Rising Global Incel Culture Could Provoke Terrorism," written by Mark Townsend, quote, Brace, a lecturer in data analysis at Exeter, said the volume of references to committing violence should be taken seriously, with more than 50 cases of incel-related violence documented since 2014. Cases include the murder of 5 people in August 2021 in Plymouth by Jake Davison, who expressed misogynistic views on online incel forums. Another involves Gabrielle Friel, who in 2019 amassed weapons in preparation for a terrorist attack in Scotland, and who, quote-unquote, idolized incel Elliot Roger, who killed 6 people in California in 2014. One concerning dynamic, said Brace, was how boys as young as 12 were being drawn into misogynistic ideology. Recent police figures reveal that more under 18s were arrested in the 12 months to March 2022 than any other year, with senior counter-terrorism officers describing the trend as of real concern. End quote. The environment is truly the catalyst. Take, for example, Andrew Tate, the incel poster boy. And look where that got him, and look where that took his audience and his followers. Before I move forward with the pros and cons portion of the episode, I'd like to take another sip of my wine. My first pro is the filter and the lighting. There was a thin layer of blue-gray filter that stood out to me, and I knew it was intentional because this is the kind of filter you see in the 90s. It added a sense of familiarity, and it kept my interest all throughout the story as well. The lighting was done quite well during the night, like the scene where David is driving around the city, the scenes where David is tucking in his mom for bedtime, and even the skating rink scenes were illuminated tastefully so as to not distract from the story, but highlighting the focal points. My second pro is the acting. I know I said I wasn't going to make this a standalone pro, but David and Andy's performances were stellar. I have to give this one to Andy's character specifically because it's acting within acting, if that makes sense. There was an extra layer of acting for his character, if you will. The acting here stood out to me because despite that added layer for these two characters, they were synchronized exceptionally well for characters that technically never meet or truly connect in person. And that in itself is what truly deserves its praise. My last pro is the highlighted relationship of mother and caregiver. This pro in particular is what made it for me, and to be more specific, it's the nitty-gritty of caregiving and how it was depicted in a complicated, yet realistic, and incredibly empathetic way. This pro was seen quite frequently in reviews that I've read throughout my research, and some were even inclined to say how true this really is, as these people have been in these similar positions before. I can only imagine what it's like to care for a parent or a family member. I understand it's not what it seems, and I'm aware that there are conflicting feelings as a result. I'm no one to talk, though. I'm not in that position myself, but from what I've read and what I've seen from this film, it's clearly not so black and white. It also sheds some light into what living with someone with dementia looks like as well. The relationship between David and Lucille was shown with such depth and a lot of heart too, and it definitely pulled my heartstrings plenty, and because of that it pulled me in even more and had me fully invested in the story. And now for my cons, my first one being slow moving. If this was sped up just a little bit, just a little, I would have given this a slightly higher rating. I thought I was maybe too impatient, but it seems like this was a universal take going off of some of the reviews that I've read. But you know, this isn't truly bad because story-based films need more time to capture all of the details, add depth to the characters, and pull in the viewer. I do believe that the slow pacing was done purposefully to show that David's life is as repetitive, long, drawn out as it truly is. Your whole life is put on hold because you're caring for your sick mother who needs 24/7 care. Every day will probably look and feel the same with little to no deviation, especially when your one true desire is to share your life with someone special. There's not a whole lot to you other than caring for someone else who depends on you. My last con is more drama-leaning than horror. Just to be clear, this is a horror movie in my opinion, just not in a traditional sense. It has horror elements, the story is just presented differently. This isn't a deal breaker, however, for a movie that presents itself as a horror film. It could have used a little more oomph, if you know what I mean. Again, not a deal breaker, but a little extra would certainly be appreciated. If anything, I'd classify this as a psychological horror film, but I may also say this because of the slow pacing of the film that I only wish for it to add a little more just to do this justice and really elevate the experience. My overall rating for Rent-A-Pal is a 7.5 out of 10. Rent-A-Pal gave plenty to think about and leaves you shocked. Its unsettling atmosphere and stellar performances will make you feel like you're a part of it, like you've lived it before, or just thoroughly sympathize with the characters. The connection the audience members cultivate with both the characters and the story, they are the driving force behind the film, making way for an authentic and unique viewing experience, the one David so unfortunately and ironically finds himself in. Regardless of the unique format and refreshing concept, the film falls short to its full potential by not committing itself as either a horror film or a psychological thriller slash drama. The balancing act can confuse the viewer, thus making them feel unsatisfied. However, its redeeming qualities are ones to take note of, such as the acting, perspectives and angles, refreshing yet relatable concept. Rent-A-Pal stands out by exploring themes that are relevant now as they were then, such as the intricacies of dating in the present, the longing for authentic connection, debilitating illnesses, and the reality of caregiving. It is still a memorable film due to its ability to make you feel something other than fear and anxiety, which is something most people will find themselves remembering the most and its strongest point. This is a Friday night watch, a good film to immerse yourself in, appreciate a day-to-day version of someone's life, and enjoy a slow-paced yet suspenseful film. This is best enjoyed by yourself to fully grasp the story, the details, and to enjoy being alone. I watched this on AMC Plus with a free trial, but it's available on most streaming services with a subscription. Thank you all very much for watching. I hope you all enjoyed this. I'm very curious to know what you think about not only this review, but I'm curious to know what you think about the film if you've seen this. And if you want to watch it, I really encourage you that you do. It is a movie that I enjoyed. I will probably watch it again at some point. Not one that I will reach for immediately, but regardless, I think most of you will enjoy it. As you all know, this is episode 8, and we have 2 episodes left of season 2. It's been wild. The season just flew by, and I can't believe we're just 2 more episodes left of the season. But regardless, there's a lot to look forward to still. I'm already making a list for the films that I'll be reviewing for season 3. There will be plenty of changes as well, so look out for those. But regardless, stay tuned for any updates and stay tuned for the release date of episode 9. Please don't forget that I will be wrapping up season 2 officially with a bonus episode on Mexican horror, which I am thrilled to be doing. And I know that everybody liked my bonus episode on season 1, but I figured I'd switch it up a little bit and we'll do it a little more formally, so to speak. And it won't be the only time that I'll do something like that, but regardless, lots to look forward to. Please stay tuned for a release date whenever that time comes. It will probably be a little bit later, or a little after the conclusion of episode 10, but regardless, stay tuned. Follow me on Instagram and like my page on Facebook, as they are my only social media accounts at the moment. If you check out my Linktree, which is in the description, you will find that I now have a link to where you can formally request a film of your choice to be reviewed on the show. If this is your thing, please submit a request and you may be featured on Gore and Grapes. I also created a Buy Me a Coffee account, so if you're ever feeling generous, buy me a coffee. It gives me energy to create amazing content just for you. Lastly, when you have a moment, please give my podcast a like on whatever streaming platform you're listening on. This helps me and the show tremendously. Thank you all once again for joining me on episode 8, and I will see you very soon for episode 9. Goodbye.